Okay, so we left off with a question yesterday that, in terms of the question of the Chovas Mechira, without going into all the different shitas we've shown him about how to interpret that Gemara, just to zero in on one of them, because it helps us in terms of De Machzoro. The different shitas, that's also worth knowing, but we can get back to that from Komo. But we are just trying to extrapolate from that Sugya that if there is a concept of De Machzoro, if there is an idea that you should provide even luxuries if that's what the person is used to, so then how do we also maybe have an idea that you should sell the luxuries before you're taking tzedaka? Apparently, if they have the luxuries, then that's what they're used to. So there are a couple of ways. It's interesting to note that the Gemara does not, or the Bavli, does not seem to see it as a stira, which is itself interesting. The Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, don't seem to bring them as connected points at all. The Yerushalmi is presented a little bit more like there's what to ask from the two together. And others discuss the topic as well. So we could note a few possible approaches. One approach is to say that it's not a contradiction that the two work together, that both the De Machzoro and the Mechira idea are both about trending downward, not necessarily about complete dropping. So even within De Machzoro, so we find that some understand, as Sammy pointed out yesterday in a different context, that we try to maintain the individual at his level, but also to help him adjust to the long-term reality, if that's the case, that there's going to be a need to have a different kind of standard. And so in the terms of the Mechira, so the Gemara talks about if somebody has gold, so you make him buy silver. So silver is still pretty fancy. The idea is not necessarily that he shouldn't have anything, but that we should help him to adjust downward. And from that perspective, maybe it's consistent with De Machzoro. Another perspective, how it might be consistent with De Machzoro, is that maybe it's talking about different things. That De Machzoro maybe only talks about items that are directly beneficial to the individual, and maybe the idea of the Mechira is about things that are less directly beneficial. That idea you could see alluded to in Tosus. Right, Tosus on the top of Samaches Amid Aleph. But the Kasev Plizov, right, so there, Tosu essentially asks the question without saying it out loud. Rahad v'had aloy ayfinu v'shadrinu k'mar ma'uk v'dil'el mishum d'vahanach d'varim lo shayit pinuk el avadai asher hayah. Right, so there, Tosus is not really spelling out the question, but Tosus is basically asking the question that this sugya seems to be a stira to De Machzoro, because the doubling of the gift that we find in that previous sugya is because of De Machzoro. So Tosus is basically asking, so how come here you don't have the same policy? So Tosus' answer is saying, well, there are some things where it's just not relevant. There are some types of possessions which are not subject to De Machzoro, which is what leads other poskim to say that there is such a distinction. Something that you directly benefit from is considered to be included in De Machzoro, and something that's more external, it's just a possession that shows wealth, is not going to be in that category, which may also be the Gemara's final conclusion. The Gemara has one possible answer of Machresha de Kaspa. May also be a way of saying that there are certain items that are luxury items no matter who you are and are not going to be subject to De Machzoro, which then prompts the question. So having an Eved run in front of you is not. So maybe the Eved is serving a different purpose, and that is a direct benefit. It's to the covet of the individual. As some of the Rishonim say, it's there to keep you from being exposed as somebody who's having financial hardships. That is a direct benefit. And there is a difference then between the Eved running in front of you and something that's really purely external. Sorry, I don't know what's going on with my voice today. But the point we wanted to focus on is one view in terms of when the Gemara has the other answer here about Kan Kodim Shiavu De Giboy, Kan Liacha Shiavu De Giboy. So there were five approaches in the Rishonim how to understand that distinction. The one we're most interested in is the Rif, which is also what's brought in Shulchan Aruch. And that the Rif says that if you're taking from Yechidim, so then we're not necessarily going to make you sell what you have. But if you're taking from the public kupa, so then before doing that, you're going to have to sell your luxuries in order to take. So what that means, if you take that as part of a question, how does this match with De Machsaro? So what it would lead you to say is that De Machsaro is only for individuals who are giving. They have to fulfill the obligation of staka De Machsaro, but, especially the luxury connotation, but the... I should probably be more accurate and say that De Machsaro, like we said yesterday, there's three different applications of De Machsaro, so you really have to split it. The luxurious De Machsaro is what we're talking about here, not the De Machsaro in the basic sense. So the luxurious De Machsaro, that only applies to Yechidim, while the public Kupa doesn't have it. So on one level, that works well, because we've developed a thesis here that De Machsaro is about how you give tzedakah. It's about the nosein. It's about the halachta bedracha component. And therefore, that's why it's in Parshas Re'eh. We've established that everything there is about your midos and about how you do it. And maybe that's what a lot of the Gemaras here and Sukkos are about, mostly drawing the contrast to the Gemara in the first parak of Bava Basra, the other major tzedakah, sugya, and shas. We suggested that the Vavasra is more about public responsibilities, what are the responsibilities of a town, that's how the Gemara gets on to the whole discussion over there. While here we're talking about the mitzvos of the individual as the fulfillment of staka. So if you want to say it like that, it all works well. You have to say that, okay, De Machsaro is for the individual to do this, but the public kupa has to have a more exacting objective standard. Now the problem is, so during the Chazara time, various Talmidim asked me two questions which we could address now. Is one, well, what about the Metzias? How are you going to do this? It's just, you can't afford it. No human being can do this. And two, what about the Ramah? That seems to say the opposite, that De Machsaro is about the Rabbin and not about the Yochid. So to address those two points together, so indeed the Ramah says this, that De Machsaro is an obligation on the rabbim and not on the specific individual. And there were others who disagree. So if you look on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, it's a big machlokes. So many understand De Machsaro is an obligation on the individual, which is consistent with what we've said so far. But the Ramah indeed paskins like others who say that it is an obligation specifically on the rabbim. And we mentioned that Rav Osner has a tshuva, which goes right to the point as somebody was asking this morning, that just practically speaking, mitzvah-wise, you can't expect any individual to be able to pull this off. So the Rav Osner writes that even though there's some debate about the Ramah's position, but the mitzvah paskens like the Ramah. The only viable, workable possibility is what the Ramah says. So how do you make that work with what we said in terms of the Rif? So I think you have to say like this, that there are essentially three categories. That yes, De Machsaro is really a din in the individual, it's a din in the nosin. But it's not practical for any one individual to carry out De Machsaro. So the chiyuv De Machsaro, the obligation to fill De Machsaro, that is on not on any one yachid, but on the aggregate of yachidim. Essentially, that's what the Ramah is saying, that yes, it's a personal mitzvah to make sure somebody is totally attended to, but the obligation to complete that is not on you by yourself. That altogether, we should get together and make sure that this, the people around us are fully taken care of. But that's different than the public kupa, the public fund, which, as we discussed yesterday, has certain differences from what an individual is allowed to do. That has to work by some objective standard. So there you don't have a mitzvah of De Machsaro. That's more about taking care of people's basic necessities. And there, if somebody wants to come and take from the public kupa, we say, listen, before you do that, make sure that you have exhausted all your personal means and that you sell whatever you can that will allow you to do this. So I think that's the difference. That, again, basically three categories. The individual has the mitzvah of De Machsaro, but you have to distinguish now between the mitzvah of De Machsaro in the sense of a heter and in the sense of a chiyuv. What do I mean by that? Because De Machsaro has essentially two components to it. There's two chidushim of the luxurious version of De Machsaro. One chidush is that it's mutter. You might think, what right do I have to give my tzedakah money that's earmarked for charity what right do I have to give it to somebody who needs for an Evid Laretz Lefanav? Why don't I have to say I'm only going to give it for actual necessities? Or some of the cases that we find in the Gemara where big donations are given to sustain luxurious tastes in eating. So what right do I have to do that? This is my tzedakah money. I should be obligated to give it to people who are starving. So one chiddush of Dei Machzaro is what you might call the heter of Dei Machzaro. The idea that it's permissible to spend your tzedakah money on this. A different chiddush of Dei Machzaro is the chiyuv, that your obligation continues until this is fully addressed. So we could then split it and say that the individual has the heter Dei Machzaro. He has the right to give his tzedakah money to even such ends, and is encouraged to, but the obligation to go all the way and make sure this is fully attended to, that no individual can handle by himself, but the aggregate of individuals should take care of it. While the public kupa doesn't necessarily have this debt. So far, so good? So I noted a little bit of a support for this idea for this chiluk, a stipler in Masechta Sukkah, which I'll explain his context in a second. But the Stipler suggests a little bit of a similar chiluk in a different sense. The Stipler notes that the Gemara says there's a limitation on Dei Machzaro, that you're not obligated to enrich the person who is coming for stock. If a person does not have a previous standard of wealthy living, so you're not obligated to provide that. L'ha'ashiro. And that, the Stipler suggests, that maybe you should say that that's also on the tzibur, that the tzibur is told that they should not consider it their obligation to enrich the person. But if the individual decides that he wants to, let's say you find a young yeshiva student who's impoverished, and you decide you're so impressed with him and he's had such a hard life till now, you want to give him one lump sum that will make him very wealthy and take care of him for a long time. So the type would suggest maybe that's discretionary and allowed. That as an individual, you could do that. The Gemara says you're not obligated, so it doesn't go to the chiyuv of Dei Machzaro. But the heter, so to speak, this basically this distinction I'm saying between the heter and the chiyuv, so the Stipler makes a similar point as far as this limitation of not being obligated to enrich someone. Maybe the Gemara just means you're not obligated to do that, but one does have the discretion to do that. He's not sure about it, but he thinks, Araya, that you might be able to do this, is the fact that we find that somebody who has more than 200 zuz is not supposed to take from tzedakah. But if somebody has less and you're going to give him a gift, you can give him, as we see from the stories in our Gemara and you see then elsewhere, that you can give him a large gift that will propel him beyond, the way beyond the 200 zuz. So if you want to, with one shot, make him very wealthy with your gift while he's still in money, but now you'll move him from money to very rich in one shot, so that seems to be something that you're entitled to do from the tzedakah perspective. Now, why is the Stipler talking about this in Masechta Sukkah? So just to fill in that context. So it's an interesting piece. It's kind of totally random how it gets there. We mentioned yesterday, Gemara and Sukkah about Stucker and Chesed. That's not why the Stipler is talking about. He's talking already. We mentioned already two other Gemaras in Sukkah, neither of which are the ones that the Stipler was commenting on. We talked about the Gemara about Postgate Stucker of a Rabbin last week. That's not where he's coming from. And the Gemara about why Chesed is Gedolah meets Stucker. That's not his context either. He's talking about a third Gemara in Sukkah, where the Gemara says that if you tell a child you're going to give him something, you shouldn't go back on it, because you're going to teach him to lie. So Stipler asks, well, why is that the only issue? What about the issue that if you make a promise to an ani of tzedakah, you're obligated to go through with it? And a child is by definition an ani, because a child has no income. So he discusses that question, how should we define a child? Should we say, what's an ani for the purposes of tzedakah? Is an ani somebody who has no income, or is an ani someone who has needs? So you could have a split in either direction, that a child perhaps represents somebody who has no income but doesn't have needs, because presumably he's being taken care of by his father. Well, you could have the other way around also. You could have somebody who has needs but doesn't have the shame on these. So what exactly is the koveya for tzedakah? So he discusses that question. He leans to the idea that it's probably based more on needs than on having the status of ani, and therefore the child would not necessarily have it. I think I mentioned this point last week, that my kids asked me per night for money to buy soda, and they invoked Matanis Levionim. I didn't explicitly reference the stipend, but I think it's what they were getting at, that that's suffix. Maybe you should say that that's the Geder of Evion, the Geder of Oni. So that's a little bit of a discussion as well. Okay. So I think I mentioned I'm going to be rearranging some of the information just to package it differently for the purpose of our chazar. So while we're mentioning this whole chiluk and this whole point about the ideas that the psukim and re'eh and the gemaras here are more about the nosin and more about how you do tzedaka. So just to talk maybe for a few minutes about the habanus p'nei chaver b'rabin passage here. So that discussion we could break up into two parts. One is, we talked about the general sugya about Habanus P'nei Chaver B'Rabin and how that appears elsewhere in Shas. Let's do that later, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. But what I want to talk about first is specifically the Ksubas focus. So the idea that this passage, that Hamal P'nei Chaver B'Rabin, Sal Noach Lo Shiapel Asmo L'Kibshin Shalesh, that it's preferable for a person to expose themselves to being burnt rather than to embarrass someone in public. So that appears a number of times in Shas, appears in Bava Metzia, in Pesachim, in Sota, in Brachos. So the fact that it shows up here, is that simply a restatement of the din that you find elsewhere, or is there a specific subas relevance? So it sounds like there is a specific subas relevance, and we discussed it from another perspective. We discussed the fact that two other notations. That one, that there is an idea, there's a Mishnah, which the Rambam Paskins like, and which the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra Paskin like, that in the Beis HaMikdash there was a Lishkas HaChashoyim, there was a secret office, so to speak, where people who needed to take assistance could come and it wouldn't be public, they wouldn't be exposed as needing money publicly. And that concept is brought to the Halacha. And you find also, even more explicitly than Argamar has this, I mean, Argamar is pretty explicit, the whole story about the running away from the Evyon, so he shouldn't see him. It's really very extreme, because here the recipient is trying to see who's giving him. He's trying to provoke the confrontation, and the donor is running away and exposing himself to danger in order to avoid the confrontation, seemingly putting a really strong emphasis on avoiding any kind of embarrassment in the context of Staka. But you also find the Gemara at the beginning of Chagiga and Date, where the Gemara says that Rabbi Yanai, whose name comes up a lot in Staka Sugyos, which is also interesting, that Rabbi Yanai saw someone give Staka to somebody publicly, and he said to him, better that you shouldn't give it all than you should give in public and embarrass him. So the Masha asked the question, why is he coming to that conclusion? That better you not give it all? Why don't we say, asei docha los asei? So there are three approaches to that question that we saw, and they're all interesting. They all reflect a certain mahalach here. So the Maharsha himself says, maybe this is a case of, and this seems to be a case of efshe l'kayim shnehem, that we don't say asei docha los asei when it's possible to do both the asei and the los asei. We only give priority to the asei out of necessity. But if it's possible to do both, then we don't say that. So here, what do you see? According to the Maharsha's explanation, so how do you see it? So it comes out that you have two conflicting concepts, the mitzvah of tzedakah and the isser of embarrassing people. There's no real connection between the two. They happen to clash in this case. And you could have thought that we should say, all right, in this clash, let's give priority to tzedakah, esed dochalosa esay. And the chiddush is that, no, we don't say that, because of technical reasons. Because in this case, it doesn't follow the standards for asei docha lo asei, because of efshe l'kayim shnei. So one way to look at it is we have two disparate mitzvos here, which are in conflict with each other, and it would have made sense to talk about the rules of asei docha lo asei, except for technicality. There's another mahalach, a second mahalach. We mentioned one contemporary sefer, Chumash, Rabbi Yochum Dvorkis, and one of his svarim has this approach, that you could say that we don't say asei docha lo asei here because we inherently don't say it when it comes to halbanus p'nei chaver b'rabin. Because the Gemara in Erechim, in the middle of Erechim, the Gemara says, the Pasuk tells us, that you have an obligation to give mussar to somebody who's doing something wrong, and you should not get in trouble because of it. So the Gemara says, what's the need for that second part of the pasuk? It says the Gemara, yachol afilu yishtane panav, that you might think that maybe I should give mussar to somebody who's doing the wrong thing, even if the result is I'm going to embarrass him. So Talmud Lomar, so the Chiddush is no, that even if that's the case, even if that's the motive, we don't allow that. So says Rav Tvarkis, it's an interesting way of looking at the Gemara. You could say that the Gemara is telling you is that we simply don't say Asei Dochalosa Asei for Rabbanus Pnei Chaver Barabim, that this is not an Isser that gets pushed away by other dinim. And that same limud that we have by Tochacha could be extended to Tztaka. Just like Tochacha is not enough reason to embarrass someone, so too Tztaka is also not enough reason to embarrass someone. So then that's the second way to see it, that essentially there is, again, a conflict between two disconnected dinim. And we don't say Asei Dochalosa say ever, not just for technicality, but this mitzvah is inherently removed from such a dynamic. The third way to say it is the way, again, this is very achronish that we're quoting from two contemporary Svarim on Chumash, two contemporary halachic Svarim on Chumash, whatever. So on the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, he suggests that the resolution to the whole point is based on a Medrash, that the Medrash here in Parshas Re'eh, the psukim that we've been looking at about the Dei Machzaro, so if you go to psukim later, Tezvav Yud, so the pasuk says, "Nason titein lo, v'lo yero levavcha b'sitcha lo." That Medrash has a interpretation of "Nason titein lo," that you should give to him. So the Medrash says over there, and Rashi quotes it, "Beino v'necha," right, between you and him. In other words, no one else should be there. So Rashi quotes that part. Rashi doesn't quote the whole Medrash, which also goes on to say that that's where the Lishkas Chashoyim comes into play. That the idea that we mentioned, that there should be a specific way in which the Yanim should be able to take without it being public, that's a reflection of this din. So what do you see from that drasha? You see that that's not a separate concept that's in conflict. Well, on the one hand you have your mitzvah of tztaka, on the other hand you have the isser of embarrassing people. That built into the mitzvah of shtaka is that it should be private. So that's perhaps what Rav Yana is saying, that you're not doing the mitzvah right. The whole mitzvah is flawed if you're going to do it like this. So better you shouldn't do it this way. The mitzvah, by its very nature, requires you to do it privately. So that, again, is presumably more of a halachta b'drachav idea rather than a haflarechamolch idea, because if it's about providing for their physical needs, so then that's going to be provided for one way or another. But what the Torah seems to be saying here is a din in you, that it's not right for you to give tzedakah in such a way that also causes you to be insensitive to their emotional needs. And that's the same thing as Dei Machzaro. So that's consistent, again, with our whole thesis here, that all of the dinim that are in these psukim and re'eh, and that are here in Subis, because that's also where the Gemara is then expanding on it, are all extensions of this idea that it's about the nosin. So then the pasuk, it's just interesting, the pasuk before the medrash would have read, Nason titein lo v'lo yero levavcha b'sitcha lo, that you should, well, truth is, maybe it couldn't be read that way either way, but certainly with the medrash, reads better, that it's saying that you should give him tzedaka, and you should not make your heart bad in giving to him. So you could think it means that, well, you shouldn't give to him angrily, you shouldn't give to him with a stingy attitude, that all goes to the midos that are involved in how you give the tzedakah. And here, this adds a different level to it, that you shouldn't make your heart insensitive to his embarrassment by giving it to him in public. So all of this, again, is all consistent with how we've been seeing these gemaras. So just in the few minutes that we have left, to talk a little bit about that general idea of Chavanus Pnei Chaver Barabim. So the Gemara in Maseches Metziah, which has this din here, that the Gemara has here, that you should throw yourself into a fiery furnace. So that suggestion sounds like it's telling you that it's essentially Yehariv Al-Yavur. And that story is learned out from Tamar. The Gemara has two stories, actually. One about David HaMelech, that David HaMelech was embarrassed by people who were calling up his past scandals, and they asked him, so what's the best scandal? And they said, what would happen if somebody got involved with a possibly married woman? And he responded that, yes, you're chayav misa, but you could do tshuva and have a chelek in olam haba, but somebody who embarrasses somebody in public and has a chelek in olam haba. So essentially, he was saying that what this guy was doing to him was worse than what he had done. And the Gemara has this idea that Noach lo yadav shiyavo al safek eishes ish b'al yalbim b'nei chaver b'ram. The Gemara does compare the two, but you don't find that in the Sifrei Halacha so much. Understandably, it doesn't really come up that often. But the other idea that you should perhaps risk your life so as not to embarrass someone, so that's derived from the Gemara over there and over here from Tamar, that Tamar chose to risk being executed, Pashtus tricks being executed, rather than identify Yehuda against his will. Yehuda had to come forward on his own, one of the glorious moments in the history of our ancestors, because that's how Yehuda became worthy of being a king, and the fact that we name ourselves after him is maybe also all the credit to the fact that he, Yehuda, was Moda, and that's a very important moment in our history, but separate from its inherent importance. So the message seems to be that Tamar was not going to allow him to be embarrassed if he didn't voluntarily take it on himself, and she was willing to risk her life for that. So that's very difficult. Without the Gemara, it's very difficult why it is that she had to take such a position. The idea that if you're on trial for your life, you can't defend yourself by saying who the guilty party is, because it's embarrassing. It's clearly not what the halacha requires. Rashi Weiss discusses this at length in one of the Svarim on Chumash. It's hard to believe that that's the case, not the case. So there's a difficulty, in fact, in terms of understanding the Pashtus and the Psukim of Tamar's story. But in any event, the Gemara quotes it to make those points about risking your life. And there's a Medrash also in Vayigash, which talks about Yosef when he revealed himself to his brothers. He sent away the bodyguards and did that in order to avoid embarrassing them, but he exposed himself to danger in doing so. And there's Machlokus and the Medrash. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? So we have various sources which seem to talk about this, but you can understand it more really in the abstract. If the Gemara, without looking, even if you don't focus on the stories in the Chumash, but just by itself, you can see maybe where the bit is coming from. If the Gemara compares embarrassing someone to killing them, and the question that seems to be an issue here is, how absolute is that comparison? That if we're just saying, look, it's really bad avera, and we're using a strong comparison to make the point, okay, so we don't really functionally carry through with the comparison to death. But if the idea is that on some level we're actually comparing it fully to death, so then maybe we go through the consequences, and therefore the din of Yehari Val Yavor would apply as well. And parenthetically, we said, so how could you say it's compared to death in a literal sense? Well, there is the fact that Rahman al-Aslan, there are people who have chosen death over profound humiliation, which maybe shows you that at least on some level there are those who could consider it literally worse. Or maybe that's actually what we're afraid of, that maybe somebody will take that choice and therefore we're literally worried that it will actually lead to someone's death. Which perhaps Bizman Hazah, you know, in the context of the internet, has happened even more than it's happened in the past. So it's a very real concern that there is, at least theoretically, hopefully it's a minority of situations, but theoretically there could actually be a direct line from one to the other. So perhaps that's the question, that how literally and how absolutely do you take this comparison? So we mentioned various halacha cases, let's see how many we can say in 5 minutes. We mentioned the various nafkaminas, the halacha that were brought up in terms of asking about how literal this comparison is. The first being this question of Yehari Val Yavor. So it is a machlokas rishonim. It seems like most overt on either side is the Rabbeinu Yonah, who says that it is Yehari Val Yavor and Shari Tshuva, and the Meiri, who in a few places says that it's not literal. So those are the most explicit on either side of the fence. On the other hand, the less explicit, so the Rambam seems to hold it's not Yehari Val Yavor, because he says you're not allowed to voluntarily be Moser Nefesh, and he doesn't explicitly say you can be Moser Nefesh for this. On the other hand, there's the Tosfos and Sota, the mysterious Tosfos and Sota, which the Brisker Rav and others took as saying that it is a Yehari Val Yavor, because Tosfos asked, if the Gemara in Sanhedrin has a list of 3 Yehari Val Yavor, so how come it doesn't list Habanus Tanei Chaver Rav? So the easiest answer to give is that it doesn't list it because it's not literal. So the fact that Tosfos doesn't say that makes it sound like it is literal. However, Tosfos doesn't give the second easiest answer either, that it's included in the list, because if the whole point is it's a subset of murder, so murder is on the list, you could say that's it. You don't have to have a separate line item for embarrassing people. Okay, so it's a little bit unclear what Tosfos is getting at, but it seems to be in Machlokas HaRishonim. We emphasize many times, do not try this at home. It's more of theoretical importance that the fact that it could even be considered tells us something about how serious the Aveira is, but not that you necessarily have to or should be encouraged to follow it through. You mentioned an approach that we liked from Pinchas Levinson, who wrote in one of the rabbinical journals, Hamar, that he thinks what the Gemara is saying is noyach lola adam, that it could theoretically be preferable for a person, because there is conceivably a case where the humiliation is so powerful that the person would rather be dead. But you can never know in advance that that's what we're talking about, and there's so many variables in every situation, so he would never tell you to take an irrevocable step like giving up your life in order to prevent it. But theoretically, it could be true. The concept is there, even if in practice it's not something we can ever actually act upon. So I mentioned a few other nafkaminas, the position of Reb Shlomo Kluger in his commentary to Choshen Mishpat, the end of Choshen Mishpat, that one is not obligated to save somebody else's life, it means humiliating themselves in the process. All the later poskim did not accept this for the most part. He has a different way of getting to this conclusion, but it's consistent with this discussion. And this was not accepted by the later poskim, including Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who has a tshuva where he rejects this, but does ask, why is it that we're not Machal Shabbos in order to save somebody from humiliation? He says that when it comes to Drabanans, it seems like we are Machal Shabbos, because Kavod Abrios is also a din of Drabanan, but for Daraisa, it does not seem to be the case. He's not sure why not. Not ready to say that we should, but he's not sure why not. To mention parenthetically that the Tshuvah Shemi Shimon, a little less well known than the Tshuvah Shemi Zalman Arba, but the Tshuvah Shemi Shimon does go to this conclusion. And we thought that here also the approach by Rav Levinson could work as well, that theoretically it could justify Chil Shabbos. In practice, you're not going to see anyone saying that, because we don't really know that that's the kind of situations we're dealing with. But on paper, it could be true, and I think especially if we think that there is an actual risk of suicide, Rahman Islam, so everyone would agree that that justifies Chil Shabbos if that's really what we're dealing with. One could also say that this could also affect the question of a Kohen, whether a Kohen who Mavaz people can duchen. Rav Osner has a tshuva about this, Rav Moshe Gestetner has a tshuva about this, and they in general conclude that it's not literal and a Kohen can duchen. There are a few other, again, less well-known poskim who do maintain that it does extend that far, and a Kohen and Mavaz people cannot duchen. Shmos Yaakov has a tshuva about whether this should be included in the Shem Mitzvah Shmei Noach, if it's considered to be a part of murder. And we also discussed the questions very quickly of why is there no chelik in Olam Haba according to David HaMelech in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So it mentioned how it seems to be able to shikaso that Ravina Yonah says because it's like murder and therefore there's no chelik and it's worse because you're not going to do tshuva. And the Rambam is l'shitaso in not saying it's actually her l'yavur, because he understands this whole idea of no chelik in Olam Haba not as an absolute, you do this every once you're out, but more that somebody who regularly does this, it's a good indication that he's not a ben Olam Haba for other reasons. It's an indication this is not somebody who's a worthy personality. And there's also those who explain this midah k'neged midah, because Olam Haba is based on the Tzelem Elokim, and that's also the source for Kavod Abrios. So if you don't believe in people's dignity, it means you don't believe in the Tzelem Elokim. And then we discussed how essentially there really are two Yisurim, Mohavonis Pnei Chaver Barabim. One is Anos Tavarim, and the other is this idea we mentioned a few minutes ago of Alos Yisul of Chet, the idea that's learned out from Tochacha, and it could be addressed as two different components, that Anos Tavarim applies even in private and is a normal Isser, and Havanas Pnei Chaver Barabim from Alos Yisul of Chet applies in public, when you're taking away from the Tzelem Elokim, and that has where all the Chumras that we've been talking about come about. So we talked also there about what does Rabbi mean? Do you need Rabbi? So that's also dependent on that issue. And the definition of Rabbi, most agree, is really three. It doesn't need a minion or anything like that. But even three people is enough, because that's Ape Tlasa. And that three, it's even less than that, because three includes the embarrassee and the embarrassor. So essentially, it is one witness that's enough to be considered Rabbi, and therefore to involve this issue of the Tzelem Elokim. Okay, so I think we got a decent amount done today. We should be on track for the next 2 days to get a lot more done, and then hopefully Sunday to get something off. Any questions? Everybody? Doing all right? Any issues? Okay, very good. See you tomorrow. Yeah.